Ryan Pubala Show on 720 WGN. Earlier this week, I was filling in for Justin Kaufman on The Download when Donald Trump made his big immigration speech. We carried it live for about an hour and 15 minutes and then chatted a little bit about it afterwards, but it was mostly more about Donald Trump than about the policies he was laying out themselves. So I wanted to do a little more on this and find out from somebody who maybe agrees a little more with what Donald Trump is trying to propose. And find out kind of the nuts and bolts of what's going on with immigration in America. I've said before that I think immigration is something that's probably worth talking about. The problem is we've got politicians who make it so much about everything else, or the way they present everything turns it into so much about everything else. Let's talk about the issue itself. Joining us on the phone right now is the Director of Content and Activism for Numbers USA, Chris Chmielewski. Hey, Chris, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good. Thanks for being with us. Tell me a little bit about Numbers USA. What are you guys?
Sure. We are the nation's largest grassroots activist organization fighting for ending illegal immigration and reducing overall legal immigration numbers. We've got about 3 million activists spread across the country, and we help them get in contact with their members of Congress and fight for immigration policy that serves the national interest.
Okay, so I understand fighting illegal immigration, and that's something we've certainly heard an awful lot about. You said also reducing legal immigration. Are we allowing too many people to go through the actual proper process and become U.S. citizens as well?
We believe so, and this is one of the topics that's not discussed all that much, but it was part of Donald Trump's speech and a pretty significant part of his speech, even though he focused a lot on the enforcement side. A lot of Americans don't realize that we issue about 1 million green cards each year. So that's new legal permanent residents, folks that get to stay here permanently for the rest of their lives. We admit about 1 million per year, plus we bring in another 500,000 to 1 million guest workers every single year. So if you break that down, if you do the math, you're looking at adding about 125,000 new workers through our immigration policy every single month. And you look at the jobs report that just came out today, we barely created that many new jobs in August. So we're adding more people to our labor force, but our economy isn't producing enough jobs. And it's hurting in a time where we have a record number of Americans outside of the labor force. It hurts job prospects for unemployed Americans and has a downward effect on their wages.
We talk a lot about the jobs situation when it comes to immigration, but I imagine it also needs to be broken down to who is coming through the border and what kind of jobs they're going to take, right? I just heard on WGN Radio earlier today, our own Orion Samuelson, the longtime farm reporter, saying something about certain jobs that Americans aren't going to work, the types of jobs that maybe migrant farmers work, picking cabbage, different things like that, that maybe there are some instances where immigrants help out the economy because they're doing jobs that maybe we're not going to fill otherwise, and then prices end up going up, et cetera, et cetera. Does some of that play into this as well in those number breakdowns?
It does, and it's a very good point. And that's where we go to focusing on an immigration system that serves the national interest. We'll be the first ones to acknowledge that there are migrant farm jobs that are very difficult to fill for farmers, and we need a more workable. We already have a guest worker program for the ag industry. It's called the H-2A visa program. But it's an unworkable program, and it needs some reforms. It needs to be easier for farmers to use. Workers probably need to have a little bit more mobility, but at the same time, we need to make sure that when they're done working, they return back to their home countries and just don't overstay their visas and stay in the United States illegally. When you're looking more at the high-tech industry, we support bringing in extraordinarily skilled workers when another American worker can't be found. Well, you look at what happened with Disney World about a year and a half ago. They laid off a couple hundred U.S. tech workers and simply replaced them with foreign tech workers. We don't think that serves in the national interest.
They replaced them with foreign tech workers here in the U.S.? Did they ship those jobs overseas?
What they do is they bring in foreign workers on what's called the H-1B visa program. So this is a visa that's reserved just for high-skilled workers.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, in essence, it's an indentured servitude agreement. what we're saying is you can come and work in the United States for 3 years, but you have to work in that job. The visa is actually held by the company applies on behalf of the foreign worker. So the foreign worker is attached to that company. So that means the company can pay them a lower wage and know that that worker isn't going to go try to find another way, another job. So they're not going to lose that worker altogether, or that worker is going to go try to find another job offer so they can try to increase their wage within the company that they're working for. That's something that employers face with American workers is we have mobility within our job market. Well, employers that are looking to keep their costs down and drive down wages, keep wages lower, don't want workers to have mobility because that means, again, it will impact their labor costs.
That's really fascinating, and that's something through all of this talk, through this political season, I've never heard a thing about. And is that frustrating for you that this maybe is a real issue that people really should take a little more seriously, but some of the stuff in just the first 2 minutes here that you've gotten into is something that unless you are really paying attention, you're never going to hear just with the rhetoric that's spewed out by the candidates during this process?
Exactly. And because the Disney firings about 18 months ago were so high profile, they actually made it to the front page of the New York Times. Most of the major news networks covered it, not just the cable networks. The cable networks will get into this a little bit, but for the most part, the major national networks, when they've only got half an hour each evening, it's usually too much for them to get into. They did get into the Disney World thing a little bit, so there's been some more national awareness amongst American voters about the abuses within the H-1B visa program. Mm-hmm. BuzzFeed has done tremendous work on exposing some of the abuses within the H-2B visa program, which is very similar to the H-1B, but instead of for high-skilled workers, it's for low-skilled workers.
Mm-hmm.
But then you go back and you look at the media coverage of Trump's speech. As I said at the beginning, Trump did say a lot of things. He made a lot of comments in that speech on Wednesday night that dealt with legal immigration. He called for a legal immigration system that serves in the interests of American workers, that doesn't depress wages, that doesn't hurt American workers, doesn't keep unemployed Americans from being able to increase job competition for unemployed Americans. He said some of those things, but you didn't hear any of it reported by the mainstream media. They focused almost solely on the issue of illegal immigration, and specifically with the 11 million people who are living in the country illegally.
All right. Well, Chris, as a member of the mainstream media who was on the air at the time and we carried all hour and 15 minutes of that speech that went on forever, it is tough to go back to 24 seconds of what he did when everything, I mean, come on. Not only is that a very small part of what he did, it was that, you know, there's so much drama involved in his moment of, we're building that wall, and then the dramatic pause, and they're going to pay for it. They just don't know. I mean, you know, it's very you're giving credit a minute ago for, well, they only have a half hour, they only have this or that, and then you're going to get honest for this, when you did an hour and 15 minutes, of which a minute probably was on some of this other stuff. And it's, you know, and he wasn't, I'll tell you what, he spoke for an hour and 15 minutes. He didn't give me as much fact as you just gave me in the first 3 minutes. It's more general, let's get everybody all fired up and go, you know, take care of this problem without the nuts and bolts of what's going on here. He didn't refer to what happened at Disney and things like that. So I'm going to defend the mainstream media here just for a second and say, listen, at least we aired that whole hour and 15 minutes, so you can make of it what you want. I took a lot of heat for that night. But
yep.
Let's talk.
And
go ahead.
And we've been pretty critical to his speech from that point, that he spent so much time on focusing on his plan to end illegal immigration, that he didn't spend a whole lot of time on the legal immigration issue. But if you go to his website, when you look through his plan, he does mention that stuff. So we were a little disappointed. We were hoping for more. He did say some good things on the legal immigration front, but clearly not what we had hoped. And it certainly lacked the specificity that you just mentioned.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you a minute about the million green cards each year, because I also read that, you know, I think just visa-wise, as far as tourists and stuff, it's up to like 40 million people we welcome into the country each year. And the vast majority of those are people visiting, you know, coming to see Chicago or New York or whatever, and then heading back to their lives. And then, you know, a certain amount of workers and a certain amount of extended stays. And then a certain percentage of those people either commit crimes or don't leave when they're supposed to. And that's where we're getting into a lot of the trouble that Donald Trump ends up talking about. But when you talk about 1 million people getting green cards each year, and that's over 125,000 people a month, and we're not always creating enough jobs, or breaks down to we're not creating enough jobs to suit all the people that are coming in. Historically, is this 1 million a year way larger than it was under, say, President Bush or President Clinton back in the day? Have we gone way off the rails in what we're doing as far as allowing people into the country? Or is it just where the economy is right now, how many people we have, we need to tone that down?
Everybody hears about when people go through high school or middle school, or depending on what courses they're taking, they usually learn about the great wave of immigration that occurred between roughly 1880, post-Civil War, until right around the Great Depression, right around 1920, which was actually the time that the first Congress passed the first immigration bill to restrict immigration levels. Over the last 20 years or so, we've brought in more people during that span than we did during any 20-year span during the Great Wave. So we're actually experiencing right now the second Great Wave. So this trend of handing out a million green cards every single year has been the case since about 1996, 1997, and it's a result of the Immigration and Nationality, I'm sorry, the Immigration Act of 1990, which reformed our immigration laws. It expanded what we call chain migration, added the visa lottery, had some other reforms to greatly expand legal immigration. So ever since the late 90s, we've been averaging about a million per year. Prior to that, if you go all the way back to the end of World War II, what I like to say is at the end of World War II, until roughly the mid-80s, the country built the strongest middle class the world has ever seen or ever known about. During that time, we averaged about 250,000 to 500,000 green cards per year. So yes, to answer your question, over the last 20 years, we have issued a tremendously much more amount of green cards than we have certainly during the 20th century. But going back over our nation's history, the only time that has matched what we've done over the 20 years was the Great Wave at the end of the 1800s and early 1900s.
We're speaking with Chris Shimolensky. He is the Director of Content and Activism for Numbers USA. NumbersUSA.com is their website, and they're activists to try to raise awareness and change the laws and probably get more laws enforced as far as not just illegal immigration, but legal immigration as well. So when we come back, over the last 20 years, well, to me, that's a number of different administrations, both in the White House and in Congress. So where do we lay blame on that? Or is it not a matter of blame? It's just a matter of, you know, why did this happen then, I guess is my question. We'll ask Chris that next. Matt Bubala with you on 720 WGN.
Should I build a wall? Mother, should I run for president?
It's the Matt Bubala Show on 720 WGN. Chris Shimolensky is with us. He is from Numbers USA, talking about legal and illegal immigration. So, Chris, you mentioned since about 1990, this is when things really kicked up. We're at about 250,000 green cards a year, and then suddenly through some changes to the law, we jacked that up over the last 20 years to about 1 million green cards a year. So it sounds like when this was first enacted, the first President Bush was in office, then Bill Clinton had 8 years, then George W. had 8 years, now President Obama's had 8 years. So through all that time and all the different leaderships that we've had in Congress and things like that, what happened? Why did we change all this? What was the benefit at the time? What was the thinking? And why have we let it continue?
At the time that it was done in 1990, it was a push for, traditionally, most immigration had come from Europe, and it was very, very difficult to be from any other part of the world to gain entrance into the United States as a legal immigrant, to get a green card to the United States. So they wanted, and this actually dates back to the changes that they made in 1965 when they reformed immigration laws back then too. And then they just expanded it in 1990. So what they were trying to do was offer opportunities for more people around the globe to be able to immigrate to the United States. And all intentions were good. And in fact, when they passed the immigration bills back in 1990, Ted Kennedy, who had offered the legislation, helped craft the legislation, said that this would not increase legal immigration. But what they had done was they created this system that we call chain migration. And what it does is it allows family members who have green cards in the United States to not just petition to bring in their immediate family, but to also bring in their extended family members. And once they're able to bring in their extended family members, then when they get here, they can petition for their extended family members. And that's why we call it chain migration, because it's just chains that continue to go on and on and on and on. They started to see that this number was going to spike in the mid-90s. And in 1996, it was offered a bill that was offered by Rep. Lamar Smith, who's still in Congress of Texas. He offered legislation that would end chain migration. And it also made some other reforms, like it ultimately created the current E-Verify system, which is the workplace verification system that Trump referenced on Wednesday night. The chain migration reforms were stripped out of the bill, so chain migration still continues, the chain migration from the 1996 bill. And there are caps, but the caps obviously lead to about 1 million green cards per year. That's why I say going back to about 1996, we've averaged about 1 million per year. There's been attempts at reforming it since, but most of the attempts to reform it, the big one that happened in the middle of the Bush administration and then the Gang of Eight bill that happened just about 3 years ago, both of those attempts would have expanded legal immigration even further. The Gang of Eight bill that was offered in 2013 would have expanded legal immigration from about 1 million a year to 2 million per year. So it would have doubled it. So there really haven't been any attempts to roll it back, only attempts to expand it. That doesn't mean to say that there hasn't been legislation that's been offered that would reduce immigration.
But it's never passed.
Those bills just haven't come to the floor of the House or Senate. In the last 20 years. We're certainly fighting to try to get those bills to the floor, but
sure.
Leadership, for the most part, wants to expand legal immigration.
Leadership on both sides? Because I'm surprised when you say it's not making it to the House or the Senate. I mean, I'm generally thinking of this, Chris, as the Republicans are on your side and the Democrats are saying, no, we're going to keep continuing or growing this. But it sounds like both sides are to blame here a little bit. So why are they saying, no, it's okay, or no, we should expand it? They must have some reasoning behind that other than that this is such a great place, we want everybody to get to come live here.
Well, there's the cynic in me, and there's been a lot written about this. But if you look at the Republican Party, the leadership within the Republican Party is driven by big business. Most of their donations are coming from corporations, are coming from the United States Chamber of Commerce. And what they want to do is expand the labor pool, because it keeps down their labor costs. It drives down wages, keeps wages stagnant. So if you don't drive up labor costs, it obviously helps with their bottom line. So it drives up profits for businesses. So I think the leadership on the Republican side is driven by that aspect, the donor class aspect of it. On the Democratic side, there's a lot of data out there that says that most legal immigrants, people who have newly arrived to the United States, tend to vote Democrat. So the Democratic leadership looks at it as an opportunity to permanently expand their voter base.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting and fascinating. So going back to 1996 and when they started the chain migration, would you say then that in essence, we're still giving out about the same number of green cards, but now you come in and you say, and I got these three buddies that are coming with me, and that's driven the quadrupling of how many people are coming in?
So, yes and no, because the extended family categories are capped. So okay. They can only go to a certain limit. But once you're here, your immediate family members, meaning your spouse and your minor children, those are unlimited. So there's no cap to that. So that's what's really driving, that's what's brought us up to about 1 million per year, is because an individual, a foreign citizen, gets a green card of the United States, they can immediately bring their spouse and children. Yes, they can petition for their parents and their adult brothers and sisters and any adult children that they have, but those categories are capped. So there is a finite number to those, but what's really driving the number is that they're allowed to bring their spouse and minor children, and that doesn't count towards the cap. Now, we don't advocate. We believe that. That's what we support. We support nuclear family immigration. So if an individual gets a green card to the United States, we support them being able to bring their spouse and minor children with them.
You just think we should give out
extended family members that we don't support. Okay. So even though those categories are capped, they end up eventually influencing the spouse and minor children categories as well.
And when it comes to illegal immigration, are you as concerned as Donald Trump is with that, or are you more concerned about the legal immigration? And also, he's focused so much on Mexico because that's our poorest border, and that's where there's probably more of a population where it would really benefit them to come live in the United States. But he's really put it as a safety issue and things like that. Do you look at this as much in that light as he does, or are you more about, listen, the real issue here is people coming in here, keeping wages low, keeping things like that going on?
Well, the problem is when you have people here illegally, in all likelihood, the reason why they're staying here illegally is because they're working. So somehow they were able to obtain a job illegally, or they're working a job and getting paid under the table.
Mm-hmm.
In both cases, they're competing with American workers, and they're driving down their wages. So you mentioned before, earlier on in the conversation, that some people say, well, they're doing jobs that Americans don't do.
Right.
One of the examples that's always brought up is that they work in hospitality. They're the ones that are cleaning the hotel rooms and cleaning the toilets. But you look back 20, 30 years ago, these were jobs that Americans do, and there is still a large percentage of Americans that still work in the hospitality industry. So it's not like there aren't Americans working in the industry at all. But what you're doing is you're bringing in both legal and illegal workers that are driving down the wages and competing with American workers for those jobs. So we're concerned because it still has an illegal immigration can still impact jobs and wages for Americans. But at the same time, any sovereign nation should also know who's in their country.
Yeah.
And it does become an issue of national security.
Yeah, you know, it certainly hasn't bit us in the ass yet, but it certainly can, right? I mean, that's the thing after September 11th is we've gotten a little forgiving of everything because it's 15 years later now. But it is interesting to me that, you know, as many people that do come in, it's only going to take one for this issue to really turn around and become much more serious nationally. And I think we'd all rather that get a little the country get a little more control over that before we have to say, oh, if we had only done more. Back in the time. So moving forward with what Donald Trump laid out, are you overall happy with if he got elected? And this is the thing with any of these candidates, it's all a pipe dream that on day one, here's what I do, because that's not what you do, because you don't get to do that. You're not the dictator, you're the president. But if Donald Trump were elected, would you, with what he said so far, do you think we'd head in a better direction? Do you think he'd actually be able to get these things done? Or are you only happy, I guess, are you more happy just at least that the conversation's happening where maybe it isn't otherwise?
We're definitely happy that the conversation is happening. So the dialogue over immigration has dramatically expanded over the last couple of years. Ever since the Gang of Eight, we're now talking about issues that weren't discussed even when that bill was being brought to the floor that impacted all of these issues. So we're happy about that. Now, Numbers USA doesn't endorse candidates, but yes, if you look at, we do rate the candidates. We have presidential grade cards, which you can access from our website, and we do rate the candidates based on their positions. So if you look at Trump and compare Trump to Hillary Clinton, yes, a lot of his positions are more in line with the positions that we have as an organization mm-hmm. than Hillary Clinton has. But he wouldn't be a dictator. He would be a president. So just because he's elected doesn't mean that those policies are going to be enacted. There are some things that he can do under the law. For example, he put a lot of focus on his speech Wednesday night on removing criminal aliens from the country. The Obama administration over the last couple of years has released tens of thousands of criminal aliens out onto the streets. Now, they're not violent criminal aliens, but they've committed minor crimes, and quite a few of them have been pulled over for driving under the influence of alcohol, things like that. They just don't consider that as a violent crime. So they've released them out onto the streets instead of deporting them. Under the law, Trump would have the authority as president to deport that individual from the country. So we would feel, I do think it would move. There's the potential to move in the right direction if Trump is elected. But again, it also depends on him for enacting some of these changes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens down the road. And I imagine if Hillary gets elected, you're very concerned that things are not going to change. And maybe as far as least numbers USA is concerned, things are going to get worse.
It just depends on exactly how the election goes. After Mitt Romney lost in 2012, you saw a lot of Republicans get really, really energized about passing the Gang of Eight bill. Then once we learned a little bit more about it and we saw exactly what it did in terms of the expansions of legal immigration and leniency that it gave to illegal aliens before all the enforcement provisions were put into place, folks started to get a little bit more, have a little bit more of a negative attitude for it. And by the time it got to the House, it was pretty much dead. So we'll just have to see. It'll depend if Clinton wins. It'll all depend on how Republican leadership decides to react to that.
We'll keep following it, and we'll talk again. Chris Chmielewski, Director of Content and Activism for Numbers USA. Check them out at numbersusa.com. Follow them on Twitter at numbersusa. Chris, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Huh, an actual conversation about immigration and immigration reform. That's different. That's interesting. Doesn't get headlines, doesn't get you on CNN, though. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN.